The following podcast is provided to you free, as is all our content, at drhoffman.com. If you'd like to listen, help support Intelligent Medicine, and get great values by shopping at our supplement store, go to drhoffman.com and click on Shop, then click on the store. Thanks, and enjoy the podcast. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and I promise you a very exciting program today, because today we're going to really peer into the crystal ball and look towards the future of medicine, because the future of medicine is going to rely very heavily on genetic testing. Genetic testing goes beyond testing for, say, your blood count, or testing for chemicals in your blood. It looks at the actual genes which translate to proteins into various types of metabolic growth and repair activities in your body. And these genes, to a large extent, determine how we may respond to our diet, whether we're likely to develop diseases, whether we may require or not require higher doses of certain key vitamins and nutrients. And this is the realm of today's guest. He's Michael Nova. He's a medical doctor, and he is chief medical officer of an outfit called Pathway Genomics. So recently, the Hoffman Center got involved with testing our patients using their unique genetic profiles. Dr. Nova's scientific career began as a research associate at the Salk Institute, where he studied genetics, and he was the founder and CEO of Discovery Partners, which is a technology company. He has over 20 issued and pending patents and numerous publications in peer-reviewed journals. He is a board-certified dermatopathologist, so if you send him your skin biopsy, he'll analyze it, although I don't know how he would do that in his spare time, because he's very busy with his activities exploring human genetics, and as part of your pastime, surfing big waves in Indonesia. You like to head out towards exotic parts of the South Pacific?
Well, yeah, before I had children, I used to do a lot of that. But it's kind of hard with a 2-year-old and a 3-year-old and one on the way.
You got your hands full. So now you're based in San Diego, California, where you're conducting research on behalf of Pathway Genomics. So tell us a little bit about, what are we talking about here, genomics? I mean, there's been a lot of controversy about this, because I think a lot of people have heard of 23andMe and Ancestry.com. So what's going on here? What's your goal in putting this through?
Yeah, I think in general, genomics and genetics and all the omics types of technologies, what we're looking at is basic systems in the body. You're looking at your DNA to start with. That's genomics and genetics. And what we look at when we do a scan is we look at the differences. We look at the mutations that are in each one of these, potential genes that have, as you mentioned earlier, some regulatory function, whether it's, increased LDL or lower, HDL or, something that goes on in your body. Everything in your body is regulated by genes. Even your blood pressure, how you even think about food. So it's a very, very complicated milieu. And what we do at Pathway Genomics is we scan for many and many, many different types of genotypes, different genes doing different things. And then we sell our report, and then we put that information into a report that physicians order from us. So we're a physicians order genetic testing company.
As opposed to some of the direct consumer companies, like 23andMe used to do that, but then they got a little bit of a slap on the wrist from the FDA. They no longer can market directly to consumers.
Right, and we're one of the we're also one of the few companies. In fact, we're the only company with a couple of our tests, the Pathway Fit test around nutrition and exercise, that we can legally even sell that in New York State. New York State has some very tough laws that are even more restrictive in some respects. So 23andMe can't even sell in New York State. So anyway, yeah. So we don't sell directly to consumer. There's always a physician in the loop somewhere in our ordering process, and then the results are also looked at by physicians before they go out to the individual patients.
And why do you think that's important or an advantage? Because a lot of people say, well, no fuss, no bother, I'll just submit a saliva sample or whatever sample of DNA to a lab. They'll, you know, give me a full printout, and they'll give me my genetic fate. You know, will I get cancer? Will I get heart disease? Will I be prone to Alzheimer's disease? What should I eat? What should I do, you know, in terms of exercise and so on?
Yeah, we feel very strongly that a healthcare professional, whether it's, you know, a physician or even a registered dietitian, which we have on our staff, genetic counselors, you know, this support system for understanding the information, so the user can lean on us, you know, to get more help around understanding the information is very important. We don't necessarily want to leave people just in a vacuum getting a report, like some of these other companies do. And that's kind of the way we've operated. We find great success in that. You know, the patients, you know, have great comfort that, you know, since there are doctors and these other healthcare professionals looking at the results and making sure they're accurate and they're saying the right things, you know, you should eat this instead of that, or you should do this exercise instead of that. There's an extra level of kind of professionalism that seems to go a long way with our users.
And I really like that approach because, frankly, for a layperson, some of this information could be misinterpreted or it could be even alarming. So, you know, if you're faced with a report that shows you have a greater likelihood of heart disease, you know, instead of undertaking the right measures, you might decide to stop exercising and become a cardiac cripple you know, do irrational things.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, yeah, that's another really good point about you know, having some sort of healthcare provider in the loop. You know, people don't really understand in a lot of these chronic problems, you know, like, you know, being overweight or heart disease, it's many, many genes that are involved. And just because you have one gene that's maybe a little, you know, mutated to give you an elevated risk doesn't mean you're heading down that path necessarily. And you shouldn't do things or should do things. So what we try to do is provide a service that helps interpret, you know, interpret the results and then gets the patients to understand that there's many there's not just genetics involved in it. You know, there's lifestyle and are you a smoker and did you go for a run today? You know, all these different things add up to kind of a clinical, you know, a really good clinical, you know, information stream that, again, the docs and the users find very useful.
One of the terms that I've coined is genetics is not prophetics. In other words, you've got a gene that might make you more prone to, say, obesity or heart disease or any number of things. Rarely is it a deterministic in terms of 100%, you know, you're screwed. You know, this is it. End of story. There's this new concept called epigenetics. Could you explain that?
Yeah, I think the two points here. I think you're absolutely right. You know, that in complex problems, there's many genes involved. So there's almost never one gene.
So there's not like an obesity gene. Like I've got the obesity gene. That's why, you know, it's not my fault. I'm fat. That's because I have the gene, the one hit that causes that. I sometimes see when you issue reports, there's an array of genes, and you say, well, yes, you know, because the preponderance of these are positive, you're a little higher risk.
Right. Yeah, for the average chronic, you know, person with chronic issues like that is exactly the way it is. And then what's interesting also is you mentioned epigenetics, and what that means is how the genes are turned on or turned off. So just because you have a gene doesn't mean it's turned on, or a gene that's deleterious doesn't mean it's turned on. You know, there's other environmental factors that can you know, what you eat, you know, do you smoke, do you drink alcohol? Those can all play a part in how this your body actually uses the genes or uses the information. And that's the whole science of epigenetics. And we know, starting to learn a lot about that. It's very interesting because we also are starting to learn that epigenetics can be, carried across to your offspring. So there's been studies that have shown that people that are heavy smokers or heavy drinkers or do some sort of environmental damage to their bodies, actually some of those type of epigenetic markers that turn genes on and off can be passed, you know, to their offspring in a couple of generations. That's really fascinating. You know, that opens up this whole kind of Pandora's box of evolution kind of happening, right? You know, you're kind of responsible for, you know, what happens, you know, to your offspring in some respects.
Well, I'm sure, you know, you remember, and, you know, in our initial genetics classes, you know, you probably started studying genetics in, you know, high school or college. There was a debate between Darwin, you know, we all know Darwin, but he had a guy that he was always jousting with, a guy named Lamarck. And Lamarck thought that evolution proceeded, you know, he gave the example of giraffes. You know, giraffes, started out as animals grazing on the ground, and then there was a scarcity of grass, and they had to look up to the trees for sustenance, and they developed longer and longer necks because they had to stretch their necks to reach the leaves in the high trees. And Darwin said, no way, no how, you don't just stretch your neck. But actually, we're sort of seeing a resurgence, a little bit of Lamarckianism, because people do pass along non-genetic information in some way due to adaptations or stresses that they've had in their lifetime. So, for example, like they've actually found that if you're subject to lots of stress, that can hit your children and your grandchildren, even though it's not imprinted on your genes.
Absolutely, and those are like you said, they're markers that bind to the pieces of DNA. And they're responsible for how the DNA is transcribed and translated, so how the DNA is basically turned on or turned off to make the protein. And it's the markers, which are the epigenetic markers, are the things that are passed on, you know, from one generation to another and can affect, and a good example is stress. You know, it can affect, you know, whether an individual gets more chronic disease or not. There's another really good study. It was called the Dutch Hunger Winter Study, which you might be familiar with. But during World War II, in this one part of the Netherlands, when the Germans pulled out of the Netherlands, they scorched all the fields, and so there was a really bad famine for the next 3 or 4 months, and it just happened to be the worst winter in this part of the world in history at that time. And during that winter, there was about 6,000 babies that were born during the 6 month period, and a cohort of these children. A lot of them, not just them, the children, but also their children and their children had a much higher incidence of obesity and chronic heart disease. And nobody could figure that out why.
Well, you think it would be the opposite because they were actually deprived. And that would be like, you know, a great, you know, ultra low fat, super Dean Ornish diet.
Right. And what's really interesting is the diet consisted of about 600, on average, about 600 calories and practically nothing but potatoes and roots and whatever they could find. There was almost no meat. But it turned out that they went back and they genotyped as many people as they could get, you know, that were still alive. And they actually found out that there were epigenetic markers that were passed along in this hypocaloric state, which had people basically turn genes on that when they got in an area that where there was more food, they tended to eat a lot more, and they tended to end up, you know, turning the genes on that were responsible for behaviors and also insulin-like growth factor, turn these genes on at a more rapid rate, so they got more chronic diseases, which is like you said, you wouldn't expect that. But so there's you know, calorie restriction. Really severe calorie restriction that can change how your epigenetic markers are used. And then there's also the other side of it. If you eat too much and you have too much of a caloric intake, there's different epigenetic markers that also can potentially get passed down from one generation to another.
Unfortunately, if you eat too much, you don't. It's not likely that you're going to give rise to skinny offspring.
You just can't win either way. You can't win. Yeah.
Right. Interesting. We sometimes refer to this as the thrifty gene hypothesis, and we don't know if it's natural selection that the people who weren't able to store fat simply died off, and the ones who are great fat stores they're able to withstand famine. But under normal circumstances of ready and available food in America in 2015, they're the ones who are liable to put on the pounds. But there may be genetics and epigenetics involved. It's kind of complicated.
Yeah, it's very complicated. And then there's all these other omics too. You know, there's transcriptomics and proteomics and RNA omics and all this kind of stuff. It's a very complicated problem. And we're starting to. I think this is a great time to be in this business because we're starting to tease out you know, really strong information around precision medicine with President Obama talked about that there's this whole now precision medicine initiative in the United States where you will be able to personalize treatments and personalize diet regimes or whatever, but, you know, based on your genetics. And we've 5 years ago, we couldn't really talk about it because we didn't have the technology available. Now the technology happens to be available and is becoming cost effective. And so we're really headed down that entire, you know, personalization and consumerization of medicine.
Yeah, the test we use does not speak to this so much because I tend to be relatively conservative about prescribing medications in my practice. It's more of a nutrition practice, but this has great potential in predicting why some people seem to respond really well to one drug or another and don't respond to another. Right now, when you give, say, blood pressure medication to a patient, it's almost like rolling the dice, or psychiatric medication. It's sort of like, well, you know, we'll try this, we'll try that, we'll see what works. But with the potential of genetic testing, we might discover genetic polymorphisms. They're referred to as SNPs, single nucleotide polymorphisms, that indicate whether one is more likely to respond to a high dose or a low dose of one or another drug. Some people are great drug responders at very low doses. Some people get blown away by higher doses.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And we have a lot of that information now and around common drugs, you know, things like, you know, clopidogrel and Plavix, which are anticoagulants, and then you mentioned psychiatric medications. You know, it's a well-known fact that, you know, 40-60% of people don't respond to antidepressants on the first shot, and then you have to wait 8 weeks, and then if it doesn't respond, you know, wait again. And so we know, you know, how those antidepressants are kind of ground up in your liver, and we look at enzymes in your liver and transport enzymes, and look at the SNPs, as you mentioned, you know, look at the mistakes and see whether, you know, one drug would be beneficial to you versus another drug. So it kind of takes the guessing out. It's like you may, it takes the guessing out of, you know, prescribing drugs. And then it also takes the guessing out of, you know, what foods you should eat. It takes the guessing out of, you know, potentially what exercise you should be doing. So it's kind of, again, it's a really interesting time because it's all kind of coming to fruition. And medicine's really going to change, you know, in the next 5 years or so, you know, when this type of testing will become, you know, even more and more routine.
I guess that's why you decided to stop being a dermatopathologist and get into this. I mean, not that that's a bad field, but this seems to be a field that has a lot more potential in terms of growth and intellectual stimulation.
Yeah, I think, you know, I like being a derm guy, you know, but, you know, I'm more of a techie kind of science person, so I never really had a private practice. When I actually did my residency in New York City, I think you know that, and and came out and you know, got into private practice here in San Diego and just didn't care for it at all. So I ended up, you know, kind of starting a bunch of companies and being kind of a more of a tech guy than a real doctor like you are, you know. But my goal, though,
some people, you know, would not refer to me as a real doctor. Those who practice orthodox conventional medicine sometimes disparage alternative medicine.
But my goal is to provide, you know, technologies for. I love being in the healthcare field, you know. So, and I love providing new technologies, and genetics is genetics and precision medicine, personalized medicine. Is a real hot area.
So what's the procedure like? I mean, you know, do you have to get, you know, slice a large, you know, biopsy out of a person's hide to get these results? Or, you know, how do you submit results to Pathway Genomics?
Well, we could do that if you want, but I wouldn't recommend it. You know, it's really just a simple saliva test. You know, you basically spit in a tube, or if you want to give blood, you can do that as well. But the vast majority of our patients, they spit in the tube and they send the tube to us, and then you get your results back within a couple weeks, depending on the test.
Yeah, one little wrinkle of the test that I didn't know about, and just for a reminder to people who were planning to do this test, is they actually suggest that you smush your cheeks around a little bit like this, sort of smush around, you know, get maybe a little DNA from a little abrasion of your cheeks against your teeth. You don't have to, like, slice and dice your inner cheeks inside their mouth, but just to get maybe a little more material into this, like a naturally shells shed into that, but maybe with just spit alone, you don't quite get enough yield of the cells that provide the genetic material, correct?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea to do that. We're looking at the cells. We're not looking really at, the mucus
and the spit.
Saliva. The spit. So it's the cells that are in the saliva. So the more cells that we can get, the better. But we had an interesting case when we started up the company. Somebody put in some saliva, and we were running the test, and we couldn't figure out what the heck it was, because. We thought, well, we've got DNA here, but it doesn't look like it doesn't look like human DNA.
Well, the smart aleck, I person is part blueberry or something like that.
The smart aleck decided that it would be more interesting to put his dog's DNA, saliva in.
Oh,
which we have never figured out how he was able to do that, but he ended up doing that. We actually figured out it was a dog.
I think the guy's name was Pavlov, and he rang the bell, and the dog produced a sample. It was a classic experiment.
The moral of the story is you can't fool us.
There you go.
We will figure it out.
You busted. Okay, that's an interesting story. But hey, I have an idea, and I will only require a small commission on the proceeds from this. Is a pet DNA program that could be an ancillary business for Pathway Genomics, and right. I think people would go for that. Tell your, what kind of diseases your dog is susceptible to, and what your dog should eat, and what vitamins and supplements to give to your dog. All right, so this is what we generally do during this podcast. We pause at after a certain period. This is a logical breakpoint. Let's stipulate this is part one of today's podcast. In part two, Dr. Nova, I'd like to talk to you about the potential for detecting which nutrients patients should concentrate on taking, and if there's the possibility of detecting. So many different diets work for different people. Sometimes patients really thrive on a vegan, low-fat diet that works well for them. Other patients feel horrible and do well on a very low-carb diet. Is there potential for this type of testing to shed light on dietary and nutritional preferences for patients? That'll be in part two of today's podcast. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And we're talking about genetic testing with Dr. Michael Nova. He's Chief Science Officer of Pathway Genomics. This is Intelligent Medicine.